Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Today is Wednesday. It's December 23rd, 2015. This is John Williams. And these are the Mincing Rascals. We normally post these podcasts on Fridays, but because of the holiday, we're going to do a Wednesday, and then next week another Wednesday drop. Then after the new year, we'll be back on our Friday schedule. Joining us as always, or as often as he can, most of the time, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. Hi, Steve.
Hello, John Williams.
Kristen McQuarrie joins us too, the editorial writer and a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Kristen, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, John?
Really good. Eric Zorn will be listening to this and talking back to it, but he's not able to join us.
We're going to gossip about him for the next 20 minutes.
Live today. Well, it's too bad Eric can't be with us because this is the first time ever I have talked about the word schlong. In fact, I found myself Googling this week.
What'd you get?
I got, think about how dangerous that is. So I Googled the three following words because I wanted to make sure I saw it as it went down. And so I Googled video schlong Trump. And fortunately, it took me to what I was looking for, which was Donald Trump speaking in Michigan this week to a, you know, ravenous crowd. He is so damn funny and clever. And he was talking about Hillary Clinton's bathroom break, which he found disgusting because the fact that humans have to pee is beyond his pale. And then he said, besides, Hillary Clinton is always a loser. And in 2008, she, quote, got schlonged by Barack Obama. You know, every week it's like, okay, you can't say that. And by God, he says it. And they all laughed. And he does not suffer for it. I don't know. Steve, what is your thought about that story this week?
Well, I watch his speeches, and someone pointed out that, you know, part of his success is he's funny. He is funny a lot of times in what he says. But this stuff, the, you know, got schlonged, and then he insists it's part of the political lexicon. And I think there's one guy from NPR who used the term in the 90s, which he's, you know, will never now live down, sadly. It's like, you know, no one knew about it.
That's
then.
That's on your permanent record.
Is it Neil Cannon, I think, might be his name? I don't know. I'm sorry.
In the same context, though? I've not heard that
angle. He did
on
in
it.
The Geraldine Ferraro, Walter Mondale race, I think it was. Was it, or was it in the 90s?
I thought this was a Trump original. So
no, there was one NPR thing where some nexus or something found it. But anyway, so it had been used once. Trump says it's been in the political lexicon. You know, I'm frightened by the situation, frankly. I mean, he's also asking about, would I assassinate reporters?
Yeah,
hate him. Would I? I don't know. And I just think
it empowers people to do his bidding.
I wonder if this is going to end badly in one way or another, whether, mm-hmm. you know, he's going to incite someone to threaten, you know, to come after him or someone else. It's just such an uncomfortable situation now. I don't know.
Men and their genitalia. I think it's
She's
going.
She's been
to...
waiting a week for that.
I think.
I don't know where this sentence ends.
Well, I also had to look up the meaning because I wasn't sure if he was saying. Well, I can't say it.
No, you sure can. I mean, I think. I think we have to.
She got screwed.
She got screwed.
Yeah.
So it would be okay to say screwed.
Well, sure.
She got effed. Is that
no,
what he was?
Yeah. Here's it. Look. Yeah. Let's be clear about this. Schlong is Yiddish. It means, and it's a phrase that means penis, and if you or dick, if you will, and in the English translation, it would be she got dicked. She got fucked by Barack Obama in the election. And that's what he said in Yiddish, and that seems to be okay to everybody. And not only is that not okay, but to say that about a woman, Hillary Clinton, the former first lady, to say that is unconscionable. Okay, go ahead.
I'm having a hard time getting worked up about it because I think it's coming from him. And so this is someone who, you know, during the first Fox GOP debate, Megyn Kelly asked him about whether or not he was a misogynistic person. And, you know, he has called women pigs, disgusting. He has referenced his own daughter having a fine figure. And, you know, if she wasn't my daughter, I might be dating her.
That was
so
weird.
So him using the word schlonged and and all of the coverage that it got. I mean, CNN and all of these broadcast outlets were running it, you know, beginning to end and saying, all right, this is unedited tape, just to warn you. And so then when he said it, I thought, okay, this is classic Donald Trump. This is not necessitating all of this outrage.
A long time ago, I used to use the word schmuck on the air.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And someone said, you know, one of the bosses said, yeah, you know what, that's probably not a word you should use on the air. So in that case, I was mistaken. I don't think he was mistaken here. And to me, the more bothersome and the ugly thing is the disgusting bathroom break. He said, it's disgusting. I don't want to go into detail. It's disgusting. What is that about? I mean, to borrow Jeb Bush's term, that is unhinged.
Right. I would agree with that. That is to me, we're like wading into just abnormal behavior.
Yes.
Even for Donald Trump.
Well, that was the funny tweet I saw today. Somebody retweeted and posted, and I saw it and retweeted it myself. But it's like, Donald Trump does not think that people should go to the bathroom. No wonder he's an angry old man.
Right.
Because I guess the fact that she had to pee, and by the way, for the men in that debate, the bathroom was right around the corner. And for Hillary, it was a 2-minute walk each way.
But she had an issue with an earlier debate, too. So maybe there is some sort of situation.
She's an elderly gal.
You know, whatever. But
pee as often as old guys. I don't know.
Some of those debates have been 3 and 4 hours long, and you're drinking a lot of water. And she made a joke during the first debate because she got behind the podium right as they came back.
Right, right.
And
yeah,
she said,
right.
It takes me
right.
a little longer.
And so Trump, you know, if you want to be mean and cruel, make a joke about it. But
right.
to choose disgusting, the word, you know, I don't want to go into the details. It was just disgusting. It's just bizarre.
What did he think was happening in there? I think she peed. That's not disgusting.
Isn't it? Can you believe we are talking about this, though? About a front runner for the Republican Party? I mean,
and then they asked the Democrats about it, too. And at least some of them said, I really don't want to. And the other candidates said, I don't want to talk about what he said about her going to the bathroom, really. I just want to go back, though, to the schlong thing. I'm torn between taking the high road, ignoring it, not giving it, you know, the dignity it doesn't deserve, and not giving Trump what he wants. And then the other side is, no, this deserves a full court press. You know, probably nothing in between. You either need to go, like you said, Kristen, all CNN about it and say, oh, my God, this is outrageous and we're not going to bleep it. Stand by. But really call him out for the pig that he is, you know, or maybe you should just fight it with silence. And I've chosen to do the former, not the latter.
I think we're beyond silence. I think people tried silence.
But I also think that, you know, you really can't be neutral or wishy-washy about this. You really have to either, if you want to vote for him and he's speaking your truth, then God bless you. But everybody else, I think, needs to call it what it is and sound the alarms, because this is, like you said, Steve, almost frightening, except that he won't be the nominee and won't be the president and will fade into obscurity.
He will not be the president. If he is the nominee, whoever the nominee is needs at least 54% of the female vote to win. And I think this kind of commentary, and I don't even consider myself a feminist. I'm very, you know, anti-PC. My Twitter handle is Statehouse Chick. I get a lot of flack for that. But this, in combination with what he said about Carly Fiorina's face, in combination with just all of his boorish behavior, it will peel away voters who are right-leaning like myself and who would normally probably vote for a Republican nominee.
I said here a week ago or a couple weeks ago, I don't feel that confident anymore. I mean, we were so confident he would never win the nomination, you know, and now I think if people had to pick, he probably is the favorite. I mean, it still might not happen, but I'm not willing to rule out that he wouldn't win the presidency just because it's so freaking weird. It's all so freaking weird that I don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, really. I mean, usually have a feel for it by now. Well, Ted Cruz is now number two. Ted Cruz posted a 90-second long commercial for his campaign. It's his Christmas campaign in the country. And there he is with his adorable little daughters and his lovely wife, and they're sitting on a sofa, and he's reading them Christmas stories, and they are all tongue-in-cheek puns about Obama health care or, you know, people not working or whatever the platform planks are for the Republican Party and Ted Cruz. But it's his daughters in it. and they're lovely little props. So the Washington Post editorial cartoonist ran a piece where he is grinding the organ, and the little monkeys out front are adorable, and they are his daughters. And they pulled that cartoon down, and Cruz is outraged that they would use his daughters, which are always off limits. I don't know, Steve, what do you think about this?
I think Cruz's outrage is going to last through the convention. He is loving this.
Yeah.
I also think the cartoon was absolutely wrong, and she should not have put that cartoon up, even though, you know, the cartoon
is... Fair to say he started it, though, right?
Well, she says, look, he kind of waived the rule when he put his kids in a political ad. You know, candidates are always appearing with their families in ads, and, you know, this one was a little more than just a I love my dad sort of thing. They're 6 and 8 or something.
Right. It's not like they're Chelsea's age and they can make a decision if they want to support their mom's campaign or Trump's kid's age.
It was bad form, and she should have known better. The editor should have caught it. I think Kristen knows more about the safeguards there. But, man, Cruz then talked again the day after, and he's just so hurt. You know, it's like you can take me on. That's part of the game. I signed up for it, but, you know, leave my little girls out of it. He's loving it.
You can't handle them anyway. They're better than you.
Oh, God.
I think it is true, though, that all of the things that are off limits in our politics today, both parties have sort of respected the line with the kids, with Sasha and Malia and Obama, when there was some pushback because they were wearing pouty faces at some
turkey I think it was the
event.
Turkey party or
yes.
something. Yeah.
And there was a member of Congress, chief of staff to someone, Facebooked about it and criticized them, and she had to resign.
Right.
And Chelsea, I mean, was going through puberty when her dad was in the White House, and there was still an off-limits tone, I think, with her and her braces and going through that awkward age. So I think it was tasteless. It's the one little area where we have agreement, I think, that kids are off limits.
And you know what else was really telling about that cartoon that or the commercial that Cruz put up was, and John, you're right, I don't remember all of the titles, but one was the Grinch who gave us Obamacare, or, you know, so they were all plays on that. And one of them was the speaker, the incredible melting snowman, or the speaker of the snowman watching melt in front of your eyes or something like that. So here's Ted Cruz taking on the Republican speaker in a paid political advertisement in Iowa. I thought that was the most amazing thing of the whole story. I mean, just how much that, you know, he's trying to be anti-establishment and how much the establishment can't stand him.
Oh, yeah, I see that point. But I just felt so bad for his daughters, because even if the ad worked, or even if it was as clever as they wanted it to be, at the end of the day, they have to know, the adults, that those little girls' father is unliked by a lot of people. And a lot of that dislike is going to transfer to them. It puts them in the crosshairs of people's animosity. And I felt so bad for those girls, because they'll either be the object of that, or now they have to deal in a much more personal way with the fact that people hate daddy. And why introduce them that way to us, or to, you know, to whoever his critics are?
Well, and he wasn't just reading The Night Before Christmas. He was taking snarky political days
yes,
with his little girls sitting there having to suffer through such just, you know.
And they had speaking parts, you know, the kids weren't just like backdrop. They then were engaging and laughing, and one of them said some funny things. And
well, I'm just glad the two of you are taking on Ted Cruz, because he signed up for that. He can take it.
What
but
are you
don't
saying
touch
there, Steve?
But you keep his hands off your daughters. No, you keep your hands off his daughters, because it's just not fair.
Was it ironic that the year Donald Trump pulls out of the Miss Universe pageant, Steve Harvey and the Miss Universe pageant completely dropped the ball?
He tweeted that.
I mean, yeah. He said, if I had been in control of this thing, that wouldn't have happened. And I thought, how do you control Steve Harvey's voice? He, all-powerful Donald Trump, maybe we should elect him president.
Actually, they did screw up a few years ago when Donald Trump was still in charge. They had to take the crown back from somebody.
Donald. I think it was Donald.
No. He actually
right.
wanted
It was Ivanka. But, oh, God, my heart just really went out to poor Steve Harvey. He handled it as best he could. He apologized numerous times. He asked the audience, you know, please don't take this out on the girls. This was my mistake.
Right.
Oh, what a horrible.
I'll tell you, if you watch the video, too, him slinking off the stage with the final conclusion with his shoulders bowed is the saddest, longest walk mankind's ever seen. It was just tragic. I was talking to my son, Griff, about this. He's 23 years old, and he said, you know, the real weird thing is that we're even talking about a Miss Universe pageant. How is it, isn't that thing about 30 years old anyway? That's why when this first went down, I thought my gut observation was, if I'm Steve Harvey and I realize I've just given it to the wrong person, who gives a
right?
Who's going to correct me?
Go with it, because it's not like anybody's denied a fruitful life or, I don't know, the wrong person's president or emperor. It's a Miss Universe thing. It doesn't matter. It's a silly. Perez Hilton is voting on this. I mean, who gives a poop?
So they call him on it, just say, you know, hey, I thought I had final say, you know?
It's like some of those competition shows on TV where we all vote, but we're not sure that we trust the producers. They go ahead and put on there who they want anyway. Here's five questions in the Washington Post. Lingering questions about Stephen Harvey's Miss Universe disaster. Seriously, was it a publicity stunt? I don't think it was. How will this impact Steve Harvey? I think he'll be fine. Did the teleprompter really say Miss Columbia was the winner? What happens now? And finally, how's Miss Columbia doing? I just got done with the TV show Narcos, and you do not want to get the Colombians angry at you, let me tell you. And they were really upset about it. They're demanding a retraction. And Trump's solution, which was the funniest thing of all, you know, you either got to pick one or the other. I said, stay with with Columbia, because that's easier than having to admit your mistake. Other people said, no, you got to be true to the voting, so you go with Miss Philippines. Trump's the only one that got it wrong. He said, I would make them both co-winners, and then it would be good for the brand. And I happen to disagree with them on that.
I was at Second City on Sunday night with my family.
Performing?
Not performing. My son's birthday, though. But part of it was a really good review. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's really very good. They're funny at Second City. But part of it was a scene set in 1989, and they were predicting the future. And the joke Sunday night was, yeah, who would believe that in 2015, Oprah's off the air and Steve Harvey has two shows?
Right.
And it was about the time Steve Harvey was fouling up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like literally, as you spoke.
Yes, yes.
Steve Harvey will be fine. I mean, really, it's the worst possible scenario of this is still you got the winner wrong on the Miss Universe pageant. So I don't think it rises to the level of crisis. It can't. Let's talk just briefly about the Wheaton College professor whose name slipped me, Laricia. Do you guys have anything to say about how Wheaton College continues to handle this issue? She's the Christian woman who, at Advent time, in support of Muslim women, wore a headscarf and said, it's okay, we all pray to the same God anyway. Muslims and Christians pray to the same God, she said. And Wheaton College said, actually, you signed a statement that said a lot of things different than that, and we want at least a retraction. It looked as though the two sides would reconcile, but now it appears as though they won't. They want her to give up her tenure for at least 2 years, and she said, now I have to fight this. I don't know. Any observations about this, Kristen? Where are you on this story?
I'm sort of in the same predicament where I think as a private school and with an evangelical base, you know, she did know what she was signing up for, and they didn't take issue with her wearing a hijab. They took issue with her blurring the lines of religion. And do I think there's a racist element to this, too? Of course. So I think the school is vastly overreacting. And I can't say that I blame her for what I consider to be sort of a minor. You know, she misspoke. She said something factually incorrect that is not in alignment with the school's beliefs.
Wait a minute. What did she say that was factually incorrect?
To evangelicals, to somehow, you know, pair the two religions that they pray to the same God. Evangelicals will tell you that, you know, that is a misstatement.
Laricia Hawkins,
Correct.
Okay. I fine.
Well, that's the school. I mean, the school. It's the school's theology.
They get to pick their theology. That's the factual part. The factual part may be that there really is one God up there, and he thinks we're all fools about this.
Well, they're not running Wheaton College, and the people who run Wheaton College get to decide what they believe.
Jesus do? What's that little bracelet, WWJD? Do you think that Jesus would fire somebody because they did this?
I don't know. And I'm not running Wheaton College, but the people who are running Wheaton College, you know, but here's my thing about it, and I think we might have talked about this, John. It's just bad crisis management, because in my world, Wheaton College was looking so good after the speech at
Liberty University,
where the president,
Jerry Falwell Jr.,
said, "Hey, I'm packing. I got a gun in my back pocket, and we'd all be better off if we took more shooting classes."
And come on, Muslims, we'll show you how it's done here.
Exactly. Wheaton College comes forward and says, "No, that's not what we believe." You know, they distance themselves, and then it was a week later that this thing came up, and you just got to figure that if there's a crisis management consultant or something, would have loved to have said, "All right, this is where you just dial it back. Just bring it back a little bit. Let's manage this a little differently," because they were in such a good spot.
I know. Christian institutions in this country easily get portrayed two ways. And one is very severe. The Christian candidates are hard line. And then the other attitude is that they're loving and forgiving, and they're the balm that society needs. This doesn't play into that. It just makes them look less forgiving, more strict, and less of what we need these days, says me, right? So join me now through the years as we all will be together. I asked you guys at the end of this conversation to at least give me something, some sort of spirit of the holiday story that we can tell. And Kristen, your editorial today was maybe an example of that, right?
Well, yes. I always feel conflicted around this time of year because it's a paradox. The holidays are bearing down on you, yet they're also uplifting, and you're supposed to feel so happy, but they can be really lonely for people. And the to-do list and the shopping, it's all very commercialized. So the editorial today just, you know, kind of reminds us all to take a deep breath, to choose kindness, to remember the predicaments of others, especially at this time. And we highlighted the case of someone named Whitney Fritz, who lives in Byron, Illinois, and is celebrating what will probably be her last Christmas with her family. She's 19 years old, and she suffers from a disease where her joints don't work properly, and she has a collapsed lung. And she has had a huge outpouring of love and support from around the world, because she said one of the things she wanted for Christmas were Christmas cards. So people are sending her cards from all around the country and all around the world. And it's just a nice, you know, take a reflective moment and remember, you know, the meaning of the season.
And my understanding is she really loves it, too. It's funny that Christmas cards, which are analog, which are so old-fashioned and simple, could really bring somebody joy. Isn't that nice to remember, too?
It is.
You know what I would say, John? I would just say, because I'm thinking and listening to Kristen and listening to you, my advice to myself, which I'm giving today and probably will forget by next year, is just give a gift. You know, in my mind, when you give someone a gift, sometimes it's a risk, right? You're extending yourself in a way. If it's not the pro forma mom, dad, sister, you know, if you just give to someone who might not be expecting it, to give them a gift. And, you know, I had a few people in my head, and then I was chicken out. I'm like, well, that would be awkward. You know, I don't want to give her chocolate.
You can give me my gift. It's okay.
John, Kristen was not on my list. So I didn't do those this year. And yesterday, Wendy Snyder from Bill and Wendy, she had the day off, and she came in. She came downtown to give me a little gift. It wasn't a big deal, but she came all the way down, and it just was such a sweet thing. And then the next day, I'm looking at one of the women who I thought I might buy a gift for, and I didn't. And so I'm kicking myself for that. So buy a gift.
Yeah. The most viewed video that CBS News has ever posted, and you'll see it if you just YouTube it. In fact, on the posting of this podcast, I'll include a link to it, so as you listen to this, you can click right over to it. The most viewed video is the Secret Santa story that CBS did. Steve Hartman, he does those sort of feel-good stories on Fridays. They run them again on Sundays, where they took some of the Kansas City sheriff's deputies, whatever the county is there, and they gave them $100 bills. This guy, who's a wealthy, private, anonymous businessman, every year He did it again this year, and I think the Pittsburgh area, but a couple years ago he did it in Kansas City. And he gives it to the cops, and then they pull over sad-looking cars, ones with Bondo, rusting. You know, they got a donut on one of the tires, and they were kind of a rough neighborhoods. And he would just pull them over. And then the people are like, oh, crap, I don't think I did anything wrong. They're really agitated when he walks up. And he says, you know, Merry Christmas. We just Secret Santa just wants you to have this $100 bill. And the people collapse in tears. They're so appreciative. He'd walk into like a dollar store and just give everybody hundreds. And they were elated. I mean, beyond what you think $100 could buy. You know what I mean? And it was maybe the surprise of it. But for one woman he pulled over, she's got three kids. And when he walks up, she's still talking on her cell phone to her husband or somebody. She's going, well, I know I didn't do anything wrong. And now I'm getting pulled over and I've been driving straight ahead. And so the officer says, how are you doing? And she said, well, I was doing fine until you pulled me over. And then he said, well, I just want you to have this. And he hands her a $100 bill. And she pauses and she starts to cry. And she said, my kids don't have a Christmas this year, but now I can get them something. You know, and I don't know what you're going to get three kids with $100, but she was going to get them something. And you watch that and you just think, holy crap, there's... I think we forget in our grand Christmases how some people are living so close to the line. And like you said, Steve, how simple sometimes just a little gift can be, how good it can make people feel. So that's my watch.
It's a nice story.
Oh, my gosh. Watch it. You'll just love it. Any last recommendations of things you guys, this kind of scratched that itch, but any recommendations for things that you're watching, reading, or listening to?
Drinking.
I know. I've got one for you.
Okay. Wait. Can I, before you two start drinking?
I do have a recipe.
Okay.
Can I give myself a little plug? So up on WGNRadio.com by now is my Business Lunch Christmas show, which was, for lack of a better term, a very Muslim Christmas. And I don't mean it that way, but what happened, I thought, well, you know what? All these people are going to church, Christians. A lot of them are going to their families. They're talking about what they're afraid of these days. Why don't I take the time to sit down with a couple of people who follow Islam, who are Muslims, and talk to them very basically about their faith, about their life here. I'm from the North Shore, where all my Jewish friends eat Chinese and go to the movies on Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
What do Muslims do? So we just kind of talked about that, and that's a podcast up at WGNRadio.com, The Business Lunch.
Good deal, Steve. All right, here's my recipe. I'll just go fast, and then you can play this part of the podcast back over and over to get it right. But here's what you're going to end up doing. You're going to make a simple syrup, you know, equal part of sugar and water in a pot. Boil that for about 5 minutes, but drop in there some sage leaves, maybe 10 of them. And then drain that off, cool it, and then mix, say, a shot of that sage-infused simple syrup with maybe 2 shots of bourbon and a dash of Angostura bitters, and mix that in a rocks glass with ice and fresh cranberries and a sage leaf for ornament, and then top it off with a splash of club soda, and you will have the merriest of Christmases ever.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
It's called a sleigh ride. Ooh.
Mm.
All right, Kristen, your observation for us?
I was just going to I will suggest the Business Lunch podcast. I think that sounds wonderful to listen to. But in line with that, there's a quick story in today's Tribune from a reporter on our staff who is Muslim, and she talks about just the day-to-day beating, sort of, that she has to go through and has since 9/11, since she was a kid. It just gives you a good perspective of an American Muslim and what they're enduring right now.
Merry Christmas from all of us at Mincing Rascals. Remember, we'll post this today, Wednesday, and again the Wednesday in between Christmas and the New Year. Thank you, Michael Heidemann, for being our producer in this segment, and Bob Ferguson's usually running the dials. Eric Zorn couldn't be with us today, but perhaps he will next week.
It felt pretty good, didn't it?
Hi, Eric.
We missed you.
We really missed you,
we
Eric.
You.
And we are the Mincing Rascals.
Merry Christmas.
You little rascal, you!